Good evening, everyone. This is State Senator Steve Santaciro, and I want to welcome you this evening to our live telephone town hall. Tonight, I'm very pleased to be joined by two special guests, Dr. Jennifer Kitchen and Dr. Timothy Block. We will be discussing the coronavirus, and to answer any questions you might have, we are providing this town hall. The format will allow you to listen and even ask a question from the comfort of your home. If you'd like to ask a question at any time during the course of our town hall this evening, you need to press star 3 on your phone. As we're getting started, I'd like to share a few updates on upcoming events. I want to thank everyone, first of all, who have been tuning in to our live Facebook town halls that we hold every Tuesday and Friday at 4:30 p.m. We are on a temporary break from those this week because we have today, obviously, our telephone town hall, and Friday is a holiday, but we will be back next Tuesday, the 14th, a week from today at 4:30 with our next Facebook Live town hall, another opportunity for you to ask me questions and for us to provide the answers that you need during the emergency. I want you also to note that we have our Earth Day event coming up. Now, originally, of course, this was going to be held at the deck in New Hope. It will still be on April 22nd, but it will be a webinar that we'll be holding along with Penn Environment, and it will be celebrating the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. And although right now we are all focused, obviously, on the current pandemic, and rightfully so, there are so many important issues relating to the environment, and so that will be a good event, and I really encourage you to participate in that, and we'll get more information out about that in the coming week. Our next telephone town hall will be actually 3 weeks from tonight, April 28th, and that will be at 7 p.m. Again, be on the lookout for more information for that as we move forward. I want to let you know that last week, the Bucks County Opportunity Council collected over 6,000 pounds of food for its food pantries during its drive-through food drive. The Opportunity Council will be hosting two more contactless drive-through food drives on Wednesday, April 8th. That's tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. And again on Wednesday, April 22nd from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Bucks County Opportunity Council's administrative office, which is located at 100 Doyle Street in Doylestown. All donations benefit the Bucks County Opportunity Council's food pantries. I'd also like to provide a brief update before we begin on the current status of coronavirus here in Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania Department of Health today confirmed that as of 12 a.m. April 7th, there were 1,579 additional positive cases of COVID-19, bringing our statewide total to 14,559. At this point, all 67 counties in Pennsylvania have COVID-19 cases. The department also reported 78 new deaths among the positive cases, bringing the statewide total to 240. In Bucks County, there are 691 positive cases, and there have been 21 deaths to date. While these numbers sound high, one thing that Secretary Levine wanted to note today was that over the last 4 days or so, the rate of increase has been more or less plateauing around the same number in that 1,400 to 1,500 case range. Obviously, that's more than we ever want to see. We want to see this disease to start to go away at some point, obviously, but the important point to note here and what Dr. Levine wanted me to share with you this evening is that to the extent that we're seeing some plateauing in the rate of increase across the state, it is perhaps a sign that the mitigation efforts that we have been undertaking over these last few weeks, social distancing, staying at home, following all of the various requests and now orders that have come out of the department, have been working. And so we all have to do our part to make sure that continues to be the case. And obviously, we're going to talk more about that this evening, but I wanted to let you know that that's at least in an otherwise difficult time, perhaps a little bit of a ray of light in some of the statistics that we're getting. So with that, I want to introduce my two guests this evening. The first is Dr. Jennifer Kitchen. Dr. Kitchen has a medical practice, a Center for Comprehensive Health in Washington Crossing, and she will be on the line for the duration of the call to answer your medical questions about COVID-19. And I want to thank you for joining us, Dr. Kitchen.
Thank you very much, Steve, for having me.
Sure. And my second guest this evening is Dr. Tim Block. Dr. Block is the president of the Baruch S. Blumberg Institute, the Hepatitis B Foundation, and the PA Biotech Center, located in Buckingham, right here in the 10th District. In light of the current pandemic, work at the Biotech Center has pivoted to help with coronavirus research and testing. One important aspect of the current research is exploring whether existing drugs can be repurposed to aid in the control and treatment of COVID-19. Dr. Block, thank you very much for joining us this evening. And why don't we start with you, if you would. Could you share a little bit more about what the team at the PA Biotech Center is working on?
Thank you very much, Senator. And thank you very much for this service. It's informational. That's right. We're the PA Biotech Center and the Blumberg Institute, about 300 to 400 scientists working generally on new drug discovery and screenings. Through the Blumberg Institute, we had been primarily interested in liver diseases and hepatitis B, but as the Senator said, everyone is pitching in, and we're a group of nonprofit scientists as well as small startup companies. And the efforts really have, similarly to the rest of the country, been divided into two approaches. One is looking for new therapeutics, interventions, and the other one is screens, developing new screens. One thing that's going on right now, and some of the work will actually be implemented to begin with tomorrow, is work through a company, Flemetrics and Serologics, where they are working with Doylestown Health and Capital Health, two hospital systems, to develop assays to look to see if people who've recovered from COVID-19 have antibodies, and they'll measure two different kinds of antibodies that say that a person is currently infected, or if hopefully there's evidence of recovery. That's an important new test that is not yet available. The other kind of work that's being done is to develop therapeutics, and part of that work involves looking at drugs that are out there or that we have. Many of our companies, many of our scientists, have been involved in drugs that have been approved for use in people, and they're testing to see if there's logic, if they have activity against COVID-19 virus, SARS-CoV-2. That work is very active, and in part from the Blumberg Institute, has been done in partnership with the U.S. and National Institutes of Health and the University of Pennsylvania. And some of the drugs that come from our place are actually being tested in people now in clinical trials. So there's new work that's being done. The message that I wanted to bring, and really my only role here, is to say that there is a national effort where scientists and researchers and physicians all over the country are taking a look to see what they can do to solve this crisis. And some of that work is being done in your own backyard here at the Biotech Center and the Blumberg Institute. And I tend to be an optimist, And I'm seeing evidence of success. Nothing definitive yet, but certainly a lot to look forward to. I'll also add, of course, there are also efforts underway to produce vaccines. That's going to take a little longer.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dr. Block. I appreciate that, and I will give a shout out to the Blumberg Institute and the Biotech Center. I mean, we are very fortunate here in Bucks County to have such an incredible institution here that has already resulted over the years in many very important discoveries and economic growth at the same time. And I hope when we get past this crisis, we can highlight that more as we begin to build up our economy again. Well, I want to You're welcome. And I want to remind all of our listeners tonight that you need to hit *3 on your phone in order to be connected for a question. We did receive a number of questions prior to the call this evening via email, and I want to try to weave some of those into our discussion this evening. The first one is from Janine in Yardley. And Dr. Kitchen, you might be able to help out a little bit with this one, and I think I might be able to offer some insight
sure.
as well, but I'm going to turn it to you first.
Sure.
Janine
sure.
asks, in light of how things are escalating, is there any concern that our hospitals in Bucks County will not be able to handle the patient volume as it rises? Are there contingency plans in the event we reach capacity, and what are those plans? Do you want to start maybe with where we are, for example, at St. Mary right now?
Sure. So everybody can hear me, correct?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So I am currently on staff at St. Mary. That's where I have most of my familiarity with, and actually been keeping up to date on webinars that the hospital is providing every week for all of the hospital staff. To keep things updated. Their last meeting was April 2nd, and they have another scheduled for April 9th, so they're doing this on a weekly basis. As of the April 2nd meeting, I am being told that certainly all of the personal protective equipment supplies are sufficient, the physicians there are protected. As of today, just so you are aware of the cases at St. Mary, there are 15 active COVID patients at St. Mary at present, and those are documented COVID positive patients, and then 34 patients that are considered of interest, which suspects means they're likely still have tests that are pending. I was doing my very best today and have messages out to both Larry Brilliant and to Carmine Volpe, who are in charge of heading up the response to this in terms of ventilator status. And as of right now, everything that I've witnessed and heard on this webinar is that they are very well prepared and have contingency plans in place to make sure that they stay well ahead of the game. The biggest concern is that the surge, when is this going to surge? And if you've been watching, the news, it looks as though this week and next week we're expecting a surge. If a surge comes, it could be in the next 2 weeks. And so with that in mind, measures are being taken to make sure that the hospital has what they need. We are seeing increase in other hospitals. Crozier, Princeton, and Penn are seeing cases surge as well over the last several weeks. So that's about as much information as I can give you in terms of contingency plans. Steve, if I might just comment a little bit about mitigation efforts in terms of helping us not get to that point. Is that fair?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, and I think most people should know this, hopefully know this, but as a primary care provider, when I get calls from my patients with questions, we know that this is evolving at a more rapid rate than any of us can really keep up with. And so the most important thing for you to do is if you're feeling well and don't have symptoms, you just need to stay home. You should leave home only if you absolutely need to. Medications and groceries, those are the only two things I leave the house for unless I have to go and see a patient that I can't do telemedicine with. My family members are in the same situation. We're even finding that limiting your trips to those places every 2 weeks is probably even a better idea, especially with the surge that we're planning on, that we're hearing about, that might occur in the next few weeks. If you're out and about, many of you may have heard about the masks, okay, and wearing a mask. It is very important to know that masks at this point are not felt to protect you from infection, but rather protect others from getting infection in case you are an asymptomatic carrier. That said, there may be some protection there. But what is very important is that if you are going to wear a mask, that you clean your hands thoroughly with soap and water for 20 seconds, happy birthday twice, before you put the mask on, and do the same before you take your mask off, because the way that this virus transmits itself, or gets transmitted, is from hands touching the face. Okay, so that's why a lot of people have said, you know, should we or should we not be using masks? Wearing a mask is helpful if you do it the correct way. And when you get home, you want to wash your mask, okay? And makeshift masks are fine. There are YouTube videos all over the place you probably have seen that will show you how to make a mask makeshift. The general community does not need to be, nor should they be, wearing N95 respirators. Those need to be reserved for our healthcare workers and responders. If you are out and about, people ask, can I go out? Can I go out for a walk? Can I go out for a run? It's good to be outside. It's beautiful outside. Fresh air is good for us. It's good for our, you know, our emotional health, physical health. But it's important that if you are outside, you are practicing social distancing, which means you stay at least 6 feet apart from others. And I would also encourage wearing a mask. Let's see what else. Gathering with others, having friends over, even if they've been quote unquote super careful, or going over to other friends' houses, even if you've been careful, discouraging against that as well, because you just don't know who's been around who. It's just better to stick with your immediate family. Again, the simple thing to do, because there are so many permutations and combinations of things that can happen, if you don't feel well, call your primary care provider. Things change every day. Every conversation I have with every patient differs. I've had 3 or 4 today, and I'll probably have 3 or 4 more different ones tomorrow. So it's just important for you to stay in contact with your provider so we can provide you with the right guidance based on real-time evidence and guidelines.
That's great, Dr. Kitchen. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
it absolutely does, and I'm sure we will have more questions on a number of those issues as we move forward.
Absolutely.
The only thing I want to add, Jeanine, is Doylestown Hospital, in addition, has set up a emergency response tent, and right now they report that they have capacity in both their dedicated COVID units as well as their ICU. But here's the thing, and you know, when we get to a peak here, all of our providers are going to have to, make plans, and I'm sure they're making those plans now and how they deal with that. But don't forget what I've been saying now and everyone else has been saying for the last several weeks, and that is those three S's that I talked about last Friday. Stay home, stop the spread, save lives. The more we can do now, all those things that Dr. Kitchen just said, to mitigate the spread of this virus helps us to flatten that curve more quickly, which in turn buys all of our treatment facilities time so that they can handle the influx of COVID patients that they're going to get. If we don't do those things and the virus, the curve does not flatten out and it becomes steeper and steeper, then that's when, no matter what we do, our facilities get overwhelmed. And we're seeing that in New York, and we're seeing that now in parts of northern New Jersey as well, and we don't want that to happen here in Bucks County. All right, let me turn now to the phones. Again, I want to ask that you hit *3 on your phone to be connected to ask a question. Can we go to our first caller? Do we have the first caller? Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't clear that I was on the line. My name's is Michael Daly. Tim will recognize me. I'm a former tenant of PA Biotech Center, and I first want to say that all the activities that are going on, at the end of the day, science is going to win and bring us through the end of the tunnel. It's purely science and medical. All the financial help, et cetera, that's going out, that's great. But science, controlling the disease, being able to treat disease, coming up with vaccines. And in my 30 years in the industry, I have never seen an industry get behind a single issue as much as they have. It is unbelievable the progress that we've made in terms of advancing therapeutics, preventatives, and vaccines into the clinic and getting them done, as well as diagnostics. So I'm not directly involved in the front lines of working on COVID-19, but my hat's off to the entire industry, and I just want to make that clear. So with that said, the only thing I really want clarity is, because I think people can react to very specific. If you're saying things in general, saying that if you feel sick, okay, and you're not really sick, those qualifiers don't help. What we need is if you are over the age of 50 and you have an elevated temperature above 103, you should go to the emergency room. We've had lack of clarity in terms of those types of specifics. If you have a temperature elevated over 102 and you're over the age of 50 for more than 3 days, you should go to an emergency room or one of these, as in Doylestown, the tents. Because I was on another conference call where, if you talk to a primary care physician and say, well, don't come in here, go to the emergency room. And the emergency room says, well, don't come here, go to your primary care. And this circuitous thing. I think the state needs to get very specific in terms of your direction.
Thank you, Michael. We I appreciate that. We have a lot of folks who are waiting to ask questions. So if you don't mind, we're going to move on now. But thank you. That's good advice, and I do appreciate that. Remember to press *3 to be connected to ask a question. *3. Is our next questioner, please? Who do we have next? *3 to ask a question. Okay. I will read a question if we don't have anyone on the line right now. This is from Britt in Morrisville. Why has there been nothing put forward in terms of rent suspension, the way mortgages have been frozen? Renters across PA are suffering and landlords are not budging. There is a housing crisis in PA, and we need to give relief to Pennsylvanians, especially renters. So there is not a mortgage freeze right now, Britt. There is a order from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court for the duration of the current crisis to prevent foreclosure and eviction actions from happening. There has been legislation proposed in the General Assembly to actually freeze the payment of rents and mortgages, but that legislation has not advanced. Right now, as I said, the Supreme Court has put a stop on any eviction or foreclosure actions. So if you're a renter right now, you're behind on your rent or you're behind on your mortgage, that will provide you with some time, at least for the duration of the current crisis. Again, *3 is what you need to press on your phone to be connected to the call. Do we have another caller on the line?
Hello?
Do we have a caller on the line? Yes.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hi.
One.
Okay. My question has to do with availability of testing in Bucks County. I sat in on Congressman Fitzpatrick's town hall last week, and apparently there's only one private lab in Middletown that's doing testing, and they're charging $100. So I just wanted to see like whether there's been any change to that, or if that's that's what it is.
Well, I'm aware of three testing locations. There's that private lab that you talked about, which is right near the Oxford Valley Mall. Then St. Mary has a drive-in testing facility, and Doylestown Hospital does as well. I believe for all of them, you need a doctor's script. In the case of St.
Yes.
Mary, you also have to have an appointment. I don't believe you have to have an appointment
actually,
at Doylestown.
Actually, can I just wait? So for St. Mary, St. Mary right now, you do need to be on, you need to have I believe a doctor. Right now, you have to have a note from a doctor who's on staff at St. Mary. That's the last information that I have. But you do not need an appointment, actually. There's a procedure that if your doctor is on staff at St. Mary, you would call your doctor, and they would initiate the process for you where they would basically get you a requisition, and then you would basically show up at the testing site and near the Oxford Valley Mall Sunday.
Is that something that's relatively, something that's new since last Thursday when Congressman Fitzpatrick had his town hall? Because the physician who's head of the county health department said that mm-hmm. the facility in Middletown was the only place in Bucks County.
Yeah, so St. Mary is operating a site that is around the Oxford Valley Mall. It's in the lost area of the Oxford Valley Mall for patients who have a requisition from a doctor who was on staff at St. Mary. So that's all I can tell you about St. Mary. I believe Doylestown is doing the same exact thing. You need a letter and a lab order, okay? And, you know, this is why it's really important for you if you're ill to call your primary care physician. I hope most people have primary care doctors, right? Because those are the people who should really be able to answer these questions for you and direct you to where you need to be. When there was still some concern about where people could go for testing, a resource if you do not have a doctor is to call, and Steve, you can correct me if you know any different, is the Bucks County Department of Health. And for people mm-hmm. who are exhibiting symptoms, right now there is no role for testing someone who does not have symptoms. That is a standard blanket statement right now. If you do not have symptoms of COVID, there is no indication for testing. And I can answer more questions about that in a little, you know, if we need to. But if you have
right.
symptoms and you don't have access to someone who can get you to the testing, you call the Bucks County Department of Health. They will triage you, and they will work with one of their hospital partners to get you to a place where you can be tested. Okay, that is my current understanding. Okay. But Doylestown okay. patients, the doctors who work at Doylestown, their patients should be able to get testing through them, and same thing with St. Mary.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Kitchen. Okay, next
sure.
up is Donna from Doylestown. And remember, hit *3 on your phone to be connected to ask a question. Donna, you're up.
Hi. Oh.
Go ahead, Donna. You're on. Hello, Donna. Are you there?
Hello.
Yes, Donna. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. I'm calling because I've been hearing rumors that ibuprofen is not good to be taking if you think you have the COVID-19 virus. I was wondering if that's true or if, you know, anybody there would have an answer to that.
Sure. Sure. So the most recent information that I have is that that there is not clear evidence that ibuprofen is harmful in the setting of COVID infection. There was a statement made a few weeks back, and then the World Health Organization reversed that. So in general, I think that, you know, because there is some uncertainty, if you have a fever and you're not taking medications like ibuprofen or naproxen or Aleve or Motrin or Advil, any of those anti-inflammatories, that Tylenol is probably going to be your safest bet unless you've been told by your doctor that Tylenol is not safe for you, and that would be in situations where you might have liver disease, et cetera. All right. But individuals who are taking medications like ibuprofen or other anti-inflammatories for chronic medical conditions, there has not been a widespread recommendation for patients to stop taking those medications. Again, if you have that question, that's a call right to your doctor, okay?
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Kitchen. And next we have Larry from Yardley. Larry, you're on the line. Go ahead.
How you doing? I had a question for the doctors. My wife and I live with my other daughter at home. We've been practicing social distancing. We stay in the house. I do go for a walk a few days a week in the neighborhood and then come back in. But my question is, my other daughter lives with her husband and my two grandchildren in Holland a little way. And my question is, we've been, all of us been asymptomatic for weeks now. I'm wondering, is there any danger for us to get them coming to our house if we go there, or is it still better to stay away?
That's a very good question. And so, and as you can imagine, there's not a, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay, perfect. It's a very good question. And as you can imagine, there's a lot of gray areas there. So, you know, speaking from a person who would love to see her family, if I can be 100% sure that no one from another house has been around anyone else, grocery shopping anywhere for 14 days, and I haven't either. There's no chance that anyone could have been exposed, and I think that that's okay. But I think that's pretty tricky. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, unless everybody truly is completely self-quarantining in their home for 14 days, you know, it may be better just to avoid those gatherings. And again, that's not necessarily a science-based answer, but that's a caution-based answer on my part. And I'm sure anybody, you know, Steve, you may be able to weigh in on that too, how you feel about your own family and you know, anybody else who wants to weigh in too.
Sure. So Larry, and I want to go on to our next caller, obviously, because I want to get as many folks in as possible.
Sure.
But I would err on the side of caution. I know you want to see your grandkids, and I understand that. And if I were in your shoes, I would want to also. But let's, at least for the next few weeks, let's see where we are with this virus. Yep. And whether we get this peak. But that would be my recommendation. But thank you for the call. And next I have Eileen. Eileen, are you on the line? Again, hit *3 to be connected to the call tonight. *3. Eileen?
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm right here. I have a question about hydroxychloroquine. I have lupus, and I just want, I guess whoever should know about that, to be aware that lupus and rheumatoid arthritis patients need Flaconil or hydrochloroquine, however you say it.
Hydroxychloroquine, you got it.
Yes. So are the right people aware of that?
Well, so this has been a little thorn in my side for the last few weeks. So first of all, I'll be brief and tell you that you've seen this. There are no FDA-approved agents for treating COVID. Okay, there are not. The only time hydroxychloroquine is to be used, and St. Mary actually has a protocol for this with very strict criteria, which is someone who is in the hospital with COVID who is severely ill, and it's to be used really as a really truthfully as a last ditch effort. Okay. Hydroxychloroquine is not to be prescribed by primary care physicians for their patients. It is not FDA approved. And you are 100% correct in your concern and probably frustration that there's a worry about, you know, these medications running out, okay? I know that pharmacies are refusing to fill these medications for doctors who call them in unless there's an approved indication for them. So we are very, very aware of that. And we'll just keep it very simple and say that the only use for this medication at present is for patients who are hospitalized, largely because there are no clinical trials available. And if there's the potential for someone to be helped by this medication, in a controlled setting, you need to know about hydroxychloroquine. It is not a benign medication. It can cause cardiac arrhythmias. It can interact with other medications. It requires monitoring. And we don't even know if it's safe for people with coronavirus themselves to take it. That's why it has to be administered under very controlled settings. So please know that the medical community, okay, let's just be very clear about what that means. The medical community is not advocating as a whole that this medication be used to treat coronavirus symptoms at the present time, and with the exception of hospitalized very, very ill patients.
Thank you very much for that, Dr. Kitchen.
You're welcome.
I know that's been a question. I know that's been a question on a lot of people's minds, so that was a very clear answer. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Again, *3 to be connected this evening, *3. I'm going to bring next Beth on the line, and then I'm going to go back to one of the questions that we had received ahead of time. Beth, are you on the line?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We sure can. Go ahead, Beth.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Go ahead, Beth. Beth, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Beth.
Hello?
Beth, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. This is Beth Corso from Doylestown, and my question is for the doctors. And my question is, if you have an asymptomatic patient or person who's carrying the virus, how long can they transmit the virus for? Will they be free of the virus after 14 days from day one
right.
of when they contract it, or
right.
can they be a carrier and can continue on?
That's a very, very good question. And so right now, so you're saying if you, just to make sure I have your question correct, if you have a person that you know has been tested positive for the virus, is that correct?
No. Well, I'm just wondering if someone's asymptomatic, even if they're not tested, and they're
right.
asymptomatic, how
right.
long will they be symptomatic for if they do contract the virus on day one? How long after being contracting it can asymptomatically transmit it? My brother-in-law was in the hospital with COVID,
sure.
and his wife
sure.
stayed with him
sure.
before he was
sure.
admitted. But she
yeah.
has no symptoms at all. The question is,
sure.
would she be a carrier? And she's wondering how long from the time he's
sure.
better till the time
sure.
she would know that she's not carrying it to her children.
Sure, absolutely. So I think the rule of thumb is if you have a potential exposure to COVID-19, meaning someone who you think could be infected or is infected, that, you know, someone can be really asymptomatic. The thought is about 48 hours before they develop any symptoms, okay? All right, so 48 hours before symptoms, you could be passing this on 48 hours before. That is exactly why wearing a mask out in public is really important, because of the fact that you could be carrying it around, okay? So once you get past that 48 hours, then if someone is considered positive, really you want to be quarantining. 14 days is the guidelines that I'm giving right now. The CDC has some varied guidelines on when you can DC quarantine, and you know, sometimes if it's, you know, it's minimum of seven days if you have a high suspicion for COVID, or if you have a positive COVID case, minimum of 70 days quarantine. But I have been more recommending, and the World Health Organization, at least as of the last information that, update that I had, is saying that 14 days is probably the safest. Now, you're going to hear more things out there, though, right now, that could it be even longer? And we just really don't know, but I think the 14-day mark is really the point where, if you're suspicious enough that someone's infected, that's the time where you really want to be quarantining. Certainly, if you are in a household with someone with COVID, you are quarantined as well, which means you do not leave your home at all. No one leaves the home. People are bringing you whatever it is that you need. You are not to leave the home because of the fact that the incubation period of this virus can be up to 14 days. And so you want to make sure you get past that point to feel confident that you're not going to be at risk for others. Does that answer your question?
I think she might be off the line now, but I think it did. Oh. Thank you very much, Dr. Kitchen. I'm going to take a few questions now that we received ahead of time. But again,
sure.
If you want to ask a question live, please press *3 on your phone, *3 on your phone. This one, I think, Dr. Block, you might want to address from Anne in New Hope. Her question is, will serological testing be available anytime soon? And she goes on to talk about what the value of that would be, obviously, and the ability to perhaps let people go back to work.
Well, thank you. So very briefly, by soon, I don't think it'll be widely available in the next few weeks, but on a specific test basis, I believe that hospitals will be able to use this on a you will be able to use the test. Some commercial tests are available. The problem right now is it's not clear how specific they are. People I'm sure will definitely develop antibodies as they recover, but the tests are not yet good enough to tell us whether or not those are antibodies that are associated with the recovery. My guess is in the next not weeks, but probably next month or so, good tests will be available. There are now kits being tested right now through the local hospitals and through New Jersey.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you very much. We will go back to the phones now, and we have Lori calling in. Lori, you on the line?
Is this me?
Yes, sure is. Go ahead. Yep, go ahead.
Hi. I just got a text from my pharmacy today saying that my asthma inhaler was not available. So I called and I said, what's going on? And they said, there's a worldwide shortage of inhalers and aerosols. And so as an asthma patient, I'm getting a little concerned because I already can't breathe on a good day without my medicine. So I'm just wondering if people know about this and if there's going to be any kind of prioritization. Because I'm not going anywhere. I'm sending my husband out once a week to the store, but like every time he comes back, we're like wiping everything down, and my daughter's asthmatic. So I just kind of wonder how this is going to be addressed or if anybody's even aware of it.
Sure. I have not actually heard that. I've not heard that from my local pharmacist. You've heard this from multiple pharmacies right now?
This was just from CVS in Newtown, and I got I'm on Brio and Incruse. I got the Incruse like last week. The Brio was the one that they said, we're calling your doctor to find an alternative. And I called them, and I kind of suspected what was going on. And they told me there's a worldwide shortage of aerosols and inhalers, and we're trying to call your doctor to figure out what else we can use.
I don't know
how widespread it is. I don't know if it's just this particular. Are they using it for COVID patients? Is it just that production is shut down because, the whole world's on hold?
Well, my suspicion is that a lot of people, when everything was starting to get scary, called and said, hey, I'd like to have, 3 months supply of my inhalers on board just in case. And I suspect that that could be playing a role in it. I don't know that it would necessarily be based on the actual epidemic, the COVID, that it's being used to treat. This is a very, very good question. And I don't know the answer to that. That's something that's new to me, but certainly is very terrifying. Your current position is, I guess, working on trying to find alternatives for you. Is that correct?
She might not be on the line.
She might have hung up. She might have hung up. That's okay.
But it sounds like it sounds like that's what was going on. We can certainly do some looking into on that issue as well see what situation. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Our next, *3 to be connected to the line. And the next caller is Alberta from Levittown. Alberta, are you on the line?
Yes.
Hello, Alberta?
Yes.
Go ahead.
My question is, does having a flu shot offer any kind of protection?
No, it does not. Not from the coronavirus. It does not.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Sure. Great. Thanks, Alberta. Again, star 3 to be connected, star 3. I have two questions here that I think I can handle that came in earlier, and they both deal with the same issue. We had Helene from Washington Crossing and Megan from New Hope ask questions about both Washington Crossing State Park and the Delaware Canal State Park and the number of people that they've observed out in the parks, whether on the towpath of the Delaware Canal State Park or at Washington Crossing Park. And the concern, of course, was that they could pose a risk to spread the virus. Those parks are open. The state parks are open for people to go and use the open space for exercise and to get fresh air. But that doesn't mean that you can go and not follow the social distancing rules. You've got to follow those. And so if you're in a park setting, you have to make sure that you're staying at least 6 feet away from other people. If you're walking on the towpath, just like if you're walking on a path through Tyler State Park, you've got to give each other wide berths as you're walking along. I'll tell you, the parks are open for that purpose, but ideally, if you want to get out to get some exercise, stay in your neighborhood. Ride your bike around your block. If you have a dog like we do, take the dog for a walk in your neighborhood. It's probably better. You'll probably come in contact with fewer people and not put yourself in that position. But the reason the state decided to leave those parks open was to give people the opportunity to get exercise while everything else is shut down. So to the extent that people are not observing those rules, that's something then we're going to have to, we can pass that information along to see if we can clamp down on that. But that's an important concern. Okay, next we have Linda, who is on the line. And remember, star 3 to be connected to ask a question. Linda, go ahead.
Yes. First of all, considering all the things that have been going on in the news, with the terrible stories coming out of New York and New Jersey and so forth, I'd like to know. I'd like to know two things, and I would also like to say, considering all that, I am proud of the way our governor has responded to this, and I want to thank you, Steve, for doing this town meeting tonight. I think they're really important. And I'd like to know whether or not you think that, and I know there's going to be a lot of 2020 hindsight evaluating going on after this is all over, but do you think that we are, how do we stack up in terms of our state being prepared for this? And my second question has nothing to do with the virus. I'd just like to know whether or not the state income tax deadline has been extended.
Okay, sure. Well, I will. I'll answer the second question first because that's the easier of the two. Yes, it has been. It's been extended to July 15th, which is the same date now that your federal income taxes are due. That's good news. With respect to the state preparedness, I don't know that any state, or for that matter, our country, was particularly well prepared going into having a pandemic like this. I agree with you wholeheartedly, Linda, that Governor Wolf has and Secretary Levine have done an excellent job under very difficult circumstances. You know, a lot of people criticized the governor early on with the what were viewed to be restrictive measures that were put in place, the lockdowns that started here in the southeast first and then went throughout the entire state. But candidly, those were the right measures to take. We saw what was happening in Italy at the time, and now, of course, what's been happening in New York. The sooner we got to a place where there was a stay-at-home order and businesses were closed, the faster we were going to be able to start to do what we could to flatten that curve. Now, in terms of the supplies and whether or not our state or any of the other states were ready for what could happen as a consequence of the spreading of a pandemic, I would say that, we're in a federal system and the states rely to a very large degree on the federal government. And the federal government has to coordinate all of the services. That includes going to what is indeed a wartime type footing for the manufacture of the various PPE that's necessary, whether it's something as simple as a mask or gloves or gowns, or more complex like the manufacture of a ventilator. Those are things that have to happen and have to be coordinated on the federal level. Some of that's happening now, and some of that supply is coming into Pennsylvania as well as the other states. But I think it could be more robust, and I'm hoping that that starts to ramp up and that we learn from this experience moving forward, because this by no means is necessarily the last pandemic we might face in our lifetimes, and we clearly do have to be ready for this type of emergency. But again, I think the Department of Health and the governor have done an excellent job, and it's an ongoing job, and that's why the best thing we can do right now, each of us as citizens, and the thing we can have the biggest impact on is by staying home so that we stop the spread, because that will indeed save lives. If our healthcare system gets overwhelmed the way we're seeing it happen in Manhattan and the other boroughs of New York City, it's going to be very hard. And that's what we have to try to avoid here. So, but thank you for your comments, Linda. We have another Linda on the line. Again, press *3 to be connected. Linda, go ahead.
Yes, I'm wondering how safe the mail is. We don't know how many hands have touched that before we get it. And I'm wondering if there's any way to cut down on all the junk mail that would maybe help to mitigate the whole situation.
Sure. Well, we were actually talking a little bit about this before we started the call tonight, and I think the consensus that both Dr. Block and Dr. Kitchen arrived at was it probably makes the most sense to when you get the mail, take it out of the envelope as quickly as you can, dispose of the envelope, and then wash your hands. Again, that hand washing, the vigorous hand washing for 20 seconds, is very important. I know other people are wiping the mail down, and I guess that's something else you can do, but probably disposing of the envelope as quickly as you possibly can is the best. And as far as the junk mail is concerned, you can throw that away right away. So that's an easy one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. *3 is the way to connect to the call, and I think we have Norm next on the line. Norm, go ahead.
Yes, you hear me?
Yes, we can. Hello? Go ahead, Norm.
Okay. I slightly different question. It doesn't have to do with the medical side of it. There's an awful lot of people here in Pennsylvania and in our district that are independent contractors. I'm a realtor, which we're forbidden from even showing a house right now or going to our office. And I have a 52-year-old son who is an independent contractor. When this all came down, he was in the midst of remodeling someone's bathroom, and he's under the understanding that he's not supposed to be out there, so he's not. So where does the state stand right now as far as the unemployment and stuff? I understand that was coming down from the federal government, and then the state would allocate it.
Sure, that's correct. So for self-employed folks who are looking for unemployment help, that will be a benefit that comes from the recently passed third stimulus bill. That will be run through the state site. They are still getting that link put up, so you have to continue to go on the Department of Labor Industry site. Check that out every day. That should be up soon. As soon as we get word of that, we will certainly publicize that. That will be available for you. And it sounds like the federal government is going to do a fourth stimulus. It sounds like there is bipartisan support for that. Another stimulus bill that could be as much as another $1 trillion. We'll have to wait to see where that money gets allocated. But hopefully, it will help to, again, increase unemployment benefits as well as direct help to our families. All right, *3 is the number. We only have a few more minutes this evening, but we have Kevin on the line. Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing? What's being done to regulate supermarket safety? The most likely place to get this virus right now is the supermarket, because we're telling everybody they can go there. But who's making sure that the supermarket is decontaminating the store at night?
Well, it's a good question. You know, the supermarkets obviously have to stay open because they are a life-sustaining business, as the state has deemed it. I think as we're hearing now from a number of healthcare experts, and I'll let Dr. Kitchen and weigh in on this, and Dr. Block, that a lot of folks are recommending now, since we seem to be going into this peak period, that it might be better to the extent possible for you to avoid the supermarket for the next week or two. I was in the supermarket myself a week ago, and I noticed that they are instituting new measures, plexiglass at the checkout counters. I know a number of supermarkets are having now one-way aisles, so you don't have people coming from two different directions, and therefore trying to cut down a bit on the interaction. And they are wiping down, I think most of the supermarkets in our area anyway, from what I'm hearing, are doing a very good job of wiping surfaces down on a regular basis throughout the day, not just at the end of the day. But Dr. Kitchen, do you want to add anything on that?
No, I mean, I think it's a very legitimate concern in terms of, you know, I don't believe that there are any strict requirements from supermarkets. It may vary from very from supermarket to supermarket about their staff members wearing masks, which I think would be smart. But I don't believe that that's been widely implemented. In terms of what, you know, so while you're in the supermarket with the plexiglass, hopefully implementation that Steve mentioned, hopefully there will be other individuals wearing masks. Hopefully when you are in the store, you are maintaining that 6-foot social distancing and wearing a mask, again, as much as you can to protect yourself. Many people will ask about what to do with the groceries once you get them home. And which is a very good question. What's that? Excuse me?
I don't know who that was. You can go ahead, Dr.
Oh, I might have lost you there. So you sort of, once you do with the groceries, once you get home, it's sort of been advocated that, you know, cleaning off any, you know, non-porous surfaces with, you know, an antibacterial wipe, you know, packages of, you know, bags of chips, those sorts of things, just washing things off when you get them home is a good measure, throwing away all of the bags. And then, of course, you know, washing your hands, you know, after you've made contact with those things. In terms of fruits and vegetables, this disease is not felt to be foodborne. So, you know, I think rinsing your fruits and vegetables in water should be sufficient. You know, washing them in soap and water. There are some that may advocate doing that. I'm not sure we're there yet. It's probably best to, you know, if you're going to be purchasing fresh fruits and vegetables, maybe get them things that are sort of already bagged up to minimize that potential contact as well.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. We're just about out of time, unfortunately. I know that the hour goes very quickly, and I know many of you have been very patient, and I'm sorry that we were not able to get to all the questions and all the calls. If you didn't have a chance to ask a question, just remain on the line, and you'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we will get back to you. I promise you about that. I know there have been a number of questions about, you know, when is this going to end? You know, frankly, I don't think anyone knows for sure right now. Again, what we have to focus on is what we can do ourselves today, and that is stay at home so we can stop the spread and prevent, you know, get that curve flattened out. As a reminder, our Facebook Live Town Halls will resume next Tuesday, the 14th at 4:30 p.m. And 3 weeks from tonight, on April 28th, we will have another one of these telephone town halls at 7 p.m. I want to thank again Dr. Tim Block and Dr. Jennifer Kitchen for joining us tonight and being part of the discussion. I really appreciate you both taking time out of your day to do this. It's really very grateful for that, and important public service.
Thank you very much for hosting this.
Thank you.
We learned a lot.
Well, thank you. Thanks a lot. Well, thanks very much, and all of you for participating. Again, stay on the line. If you still have a question, you can record it and leave a voicemail, and we will get back to you. And again, stay safe and stay home. Thank you all very much, and good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.